From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where we give you closer looks at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today On Deadline is taking a look at the rise and fall of a potential second presidential term for President Joe Biden.
Here is KCBS senior political reporter Doug Sovereign. I'm going to ask him all about this announcement that Joe Biden has dropped out of the race. And I'm going to start off with, we were on the phone a little bit earlier, and you were saying, I thought he was going to do it on Monday. It's Sunday in the middle of the afternoon. Why do you think he did it that way?
Well, I said, you know, things changed so rapidly last week when we were at the Republican convention. And at one point I said I'd give him a week. And then by the end of the convention, I said, no, I think he's out by Sunday or Monday. And I really thought that he would need to go home and take the weekend and be with his family and really go over it all and think about it. And is this worth continuing or not? Is this position untenable, which I think it had become. And I thought, you know, he would come to that decision after some reflection alone at home with family. And I guess that's what happened. I thought he would announce this by addressing the nation, and he says he will address the nation later in the week, but I didn't think he would just put out a statement on Twitter and everywhere else on social media in the middle of the day on Sunday. But, you know, we should expect that at this point. That's how Donald Trump announced his running mate. And this is what people do now. They just put out a statement. It's not the way it used to be. But so I think he just decided, you know, it's Sunday. I made the decision. Let's get it out there. There's no real reason to wait till Monday if he's made the decision. Certainly more people will find out about it on a Monday than on a Sunday when people are not paying as close attention to the news. But I think he'd reached the point where he just realized, you know, the writing's on the wall and everybody was abandoning him and this just was not going to work.
It was getting pretty heated there and people were speculating a lot in the days leading up to this. And I agree. I was surprised, too, that it happened on social media. Everybody in my group chat was. It seems like he has endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris to be the replacement. There's been a lot of speculation about different governors and senators, all these people in the Democratic Party that could have filled in for him. What do you think about him endorsing Kamala? Do you think there'll be pushback about that?
Well, it's interesting because in an initial statement, he talked about Kamala Harris. He didn't endorse her. And then he put out another one about 40 minutes later endorsing Kamala Harris, saying, I fully endorse her. And I had to wonder, gee, did he forget to do it in the first one? Did someone come to him in the interim and say, well, wait a second, you know, you've left everybody hanging here. Maybe he just wanted that initial statement to be all about his own position and how he was feeling. But then in the second one, he did endorse Kamala Harris. So I think I'm not surprised that he did that. But it's an interesting dynamic because there are those in the Democratic Party who think there should be an open process, maybe an open convention, maybe a competition among anyone who's interested. There were those who said, no, we should just quickly move on to Kamala Harris and he should endorse her. There are those who think strategically the Republicans will just be able to pivot and boy, are they ready for this. I can talk about that in a minute if you want, but that they will be able to now tie her to him and say, look, this is just an extension of Joe Biden. She's his handpicked successor. The policies will be the same. So there's no distance between Joe and Kamala, right? So if he had not endorsed her and just said, I'll leave it up to the party, and then she won it on her own, they can argue that a little less. But I think the calculus was, no, we need to fully get behind her, and we can't be just tossing her off the ticket. Now, just because he's endorsing her does not necessarily mean that the nomination is hers. It may be that there are others in the party who don't think that's the best way to go. There may be other people who want that nomination, who want to make a play for it. I don't think you'd count Gavin Newsom among them, even though everybody thinks he wants to run. He's not, you know, he and Kamala have known each other for a very long time, and I can't imagine him going against her, having two Californians fight it out. But that doesn't mean one of the other people, Gretchen Whitmer, Josh Shapiro, J.B. Pritzker, whoever it may be, Andy Beshear from Kentucky, that one of them might not want to make a challenge for it. The smartest thing probably for the Democratic Party is to not have that. Not have a big, messy, protracted fight, but go ahead and have them all line up behind Kamala Harris as the heir apparent and get on that bandwagon and be unified the way the Republicans are unified behind Donald Trump, because the Republicans clearly are very much on a unity train for Trump. And the last thing the Democrats need is some big mess in Chicago where they're all fighting it out on multiple ballots.
You mentioned the Republicans. We all know they have their criticisms of Joe Biden. They also have their criticisms of Harris and Trump. I was just covering yesterday how he was calling her crazy and nuts during his rally in Michigan. How do you think the Republicans are going to pivot if Kamala is the candidate?
Yeah, I was talking to some members of the Republican National Committee during the week about this, and they're ready to go. I mean, they have a whole dossier. It's not hard to put it together. She had a really checkered record, both as the DA in San Francisco and as the Attorney General in California. She didn't have much of a record in the Senate because she wasn't there very long. Certainly there are things to pick on during her vice presidency, but they're ready to go, and they have ads ready to go, and they have ideas and a plan, and they have barely begun to fight when it comes to her. I mean, they're going to try to identify her and frame her very quickly as in a very negative light, and they're going to go full-on attack on her. They're ready for it. I mean, they wanted Biden to stay in the campaign because they felt he was in such a weakened position, it all but guaranteed that Trump would win. They're a little nervous that it's someone else because it's an unknown. You don't know for sure how voters are going to feel about Kamala Harris, but they are ready to campaign against her. And you heard that during the convention, that each day went on, they talked about her more and more as it became more and more likely that she might be the nominee instead of Biden. So, yeah, there's no doubt they're going to come after her with everything they've got. But they're ready for that, and there's a lot to attack there. And, you know, she is not popular. Her approval ratings are no better than Joe Biden's. In some cases, they're worse. But when you look at that polling, it's not as entrenched. People don't know her that well, and they don't feel as much animosity toward her as they might towards someone else because she's not that well known nationally. So there's an opportunity to hear her still for her to change that. I mean, if she comes out of the gates with a strong campaign, she could spin that and, you know, turn that around a little bit and get a bit of a positive bounce. But we're going to have to see. She ran a terrible campaign 4 years ago for president. I was there when she kicked it off in Oakland. I've known her for more than 20 years. She's a very good politician, but she needs to run a much better campaign or she's not going to win either.
Do you think this announcement puts the Democrats in a stronger position than they were Saturday before Biden announced that he was out? Does the kind of excitement that there might be a different candidate give them an edge, or is it sort of messy and giving Republicans even more of an edge as we go into November?
I think it's some of both, and we're going to have to wait and see on that one. But it puts them in a stronger position in that they no longer have this thing hanging of whether Biden's in or out. There's going to be some certainty if it ends up being Kamala Harris or whoever it ends up being, if they can iron it out very quickly. So it puts that to rest. So that's helpful because they were not being helped by all this dissension and debate. And yes, I think there can be a little burst of energy and excitement in that, hey, we got somebody who's 53, 54, she's around there, not 78, 81. Mm-hmm. Trump's 78, Biden's 81. So there will be, I think younger voters will be happy to see someone younger actually running. So there could be that. So I think it's a combination of things that, yeah, they could get a burst of energy. They could get a little bit of boost from the fact that this is all resolved. But on the downside, the Republicans will be able to say they're tossing the president aside. What about the 14 million primary voters who voted to nominate him, et cetera, et cetera? So it can cut both ways. I do think there might be an initial little burst for the Democrats and for her if she's the nominee, just on the basis of somebody new, somebody young, and this is all worked out. But then you get into the actual campaign and you have to ask, can a black woman, half black, half South Asian, win in Wisconsin, win in Pennsylvania, win in Michigan, states that the Democrats have to win, where there's a lot of white male voters who may not like her, and they're going to hear racism, you're going to hear misogyny. Hillary Clinton had trouble in those states, and now you've got Kamala Harris, who's more liberal than Hillary Clinton, and a woman of color to boot. It's going to be a really tough sell in some of those places.
One final question. Have we ever seen anything like this before? I know I can't remember anything like this. Can you, covering politics?
Yes. When I was seven, and I was very engaged in politics even when I was seven, believe it or not. That was the year of my first political activism. When I was seven, middle of the Vietnam War, Lyndon Johnson was the president. He was extremely unpopular. There were massive protests. It was the most tumultuous year in modern American history. You know, assassinations of Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. It was just everything seemed to be falling apart in the nation. Riots in Chicago. LBJ lost. Actually, he didn't even lose. He just, Eugene McCarthy came a very close second in the New Hampshire primary. And out of nowhere, it feels to me like it was in March, if I remember correctly. I think I had just turned seven. Out of nowhere, LBJ came out and gave a national address in which he said, he's decided not to seek re-election, and it was a stunner because it wasn't like this where there was a lot of debate and people were calling for it to happen. It came out of nowhere. There was no indication that he wasn't going to do that, and he was really the first president in modern times, maybe ever, to make that decision and do that. So he dropped out of the race, and then his vice president, Hubert Humphrey, got in, and Robert F. Kennedy got in late. He wasn't going to challenge him. People who weren't willing to challenge the president all jumped in late. And it wasn't resolved. People won certain primaries. Kennedy won in California. Looks like he might be on the path to winning it. Then, of course, he gets assassinated. Then it went to the convention in Chicago where it was wide open, and Vice President Humphrey ended up getting the nomination, who hadn't even won any primaries. So it was all chaotic for months, and it went from, you know, no one having any idea LBJ might drop out, to him dropping out and then a big fight in Chicago. So It is reminiscent of that to me, and it was even in Chicago where the convention is again this year, 56 years ago. That's the only time that I can think of that something like this has happened. It's a little different, of course, but it's similar in a way. There were assassinations and an unpopular president, and it went crazy. And then the Democrats lost that election very, very closely to Richard Nixon. I mean, it was as close as you can get, the Republicans. So that's similar in a lot of ways, and I think that's one of the reasons the Democrats want to avoid something like that. They'd like to have unity at least going into the convention, and now that he's endorsed Kamala Harris, we'll see how things play out the next couple of days, but they might avoid that kind of a mess.
If it was on a timeline graph, here's what things would look like, or sound like. In December 2019, Politico reported that Joe Biden signaled to aides that he would serve only a single term. Around a year later, Politico cited a prominent advisor when reporting that if Biden is elected, he's going to be 82 years old in 4 years, and he won't be running for re-election. Biden said at a rally in Detroit in early March 2020 that he viewed himself as a bridge and nothing more. It was one of his few appearances during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Atlantic reported that when he said it, he was flanked by Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, his Vice President Kamala Harris, and Senator Cory Booker. He described them at the time as an entire generation of leaders and the future of this country. Biden beat Donald Trump in 2020, of course, and ushered in what many experts believe will go down as one of the more successful presidencies in U.S. history. We've got low unemployment and a booming stock market, but Biden has also been dogged with persistent inflation, as well as what many believe is a crisis at the border. Those issues have been hard on Biden's approval rating and his performance at the polls. In the long ramp-up to the 2024 election season, questions swirled about whether Biden would seek another term. On November 11, 2022, Odyssey reported that Biden would decide over the holiday break if he was going to seek re-election. "I think everybody wants me to run, but we're going to have discussions about it," he said. The media then waited for months while pundits claimed to know two things: Joe Biden wasn't going to run again, and Joe Biden was going to run again. If that seems confusing to you, it's because it was. Then, on February 23rd, 2024, Odyssey reported that top Democrats were growing uneasy with this uncertainty. The list of what some have called the Democrats' Plan B includes three high-profile governors: Phil Murphy of New Jersey, Gavin Newsom of California, and J.B. Pritzker of Illinois, as well as Senators Amy Klobuchar and Bernie Sanders. Biden himself stayed mum on the issue through the spring. And then, on April 25th, 2024, Biden finally answered those questions by formally announcing he was running for re-election. He asked voters to give him more time to finish this job. And then, last month, on June 27th, 2024, Biden debated former President Donald Trump in front of 51 million people for 90 minutes. And what those millions of Americans saw was a president with a frail-sounding voice and a shuffling gait, one with a sometimes confused expression, who let Trump make questionable assertions with few real rebuttals. Calls started to pour in for him to drop out of the race. But Biden stood firm, releasing a statement saying he was running, full stop. On July 8th, Biden insisted on a call with top donors, and he said he was done talking about the debate. He implored the party to ignore any further distractions and direct its attention back to Donald Trump. But the talk didn't stop. Instead, it grew even louder after a series of uneven performances and interviews. On July 17th, NBC News reported that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer presented Biden with dire polling data in a blunt one-on-one meeting as Democrats debated whether the president should continue to run for re-election. That was after Trump survived an assassination attempt, images of the former president pumping his fist with blood streaming down his face took the internet by storm. In an interview with BET that aired on July 17th, Biden seemed to soften his stance on staying in the race. He said he would drop out if a doctor diagnosed him with a medical condition and recommended that he not run. That day, the White House announced that the president had COVID-19. And then we come to the most recent announcement, the one that many of us had been expecting for some time. Biden said that he would be dropping out of the race. And now we're asking a new question. What comes next? Biden's decision to leave the race creates both a seismic shift in the 2024 presidential race and kicks off something unprecedented: uncertainty about who the candidate will be at the Democratic National Convention, which starts on August 19th. Never before has a sitting president dropped out of the running for a second term a month before the convention. But we should note that he isn't the only sitting president to drop out of the running for a second term. Democrats Harry S. Truman and Lyndon B. Johnson both announced in the spring of their final terms that they would not seek re-election following subpar primary results. But Truman did so 297 days before the end of his term, and Johnson made his announcement 295 days before the end of his term. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.